College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Utah head coach Craig Smith. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And a reminder to find and listen to the College Hoops Today podcast on all the popular podcast platforms. And I want to let you know that today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast being sponsored by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And some big news late last week as the NCAA finally passed a one-time transfer exemption for all players now having the ability to transfer once without sitting out through their college career. This was obviously expected. It's been anarchy, it's been chaos, but it's something, in my opinion, that needs to be embraced for everybody involved. And one thing that I think we have seen with obviously everything that's happened, especially this past cycle of recruiting and the past couple of weeks, is that you are now seeing a shift in the whole mindset of how college programs are going about their business. You have seen a whole shift in the sense that except for the elite of the elite, the majority of college basketball is going to focus on recruiting transfers instead of recruiting high school kids. And I will say this, when I look at the dynamics involved, I think the anarchy and the chaos and everything that has really been associated with this rule will be somewhat stabilized next year when we go to the notification date of May 1st, and May 1st becomes the day where players have to let their coaches know whether or not they transfer by. This year, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, it's July 1st. But every single day, key personnel adjustments are happening. And every single day, we are seeing monumental decisions by key transfers and players going from one team to another that could be all conference caliber talents. We saw it early Monday morning when Memphis transferred DJ Jeffries, committed to Mississippi State. Mississippi State jumping into my top 30 now with the addition of DJ Jeffries and also Garrison Brooks from North Carolina. And this is going to give, obviously, more control for the players. And if you've listened to this podcast, you know I am all about more opportunities for players, more rights for players, but I just want things to be somewhat stable. And I think next year, when we get to the May 1st notification date, you will see more stability in, obviously, this area of recruiting. Now, we saw, in my opinion, one of the busiest, most chaotic coaching cycles that we have had in March and April this year. It was unbelievable. And I'm not just saying this because he is our next guest. I thought that the underrated hire of the coaching cycle was Utah hiring Craig Smith from Utah State. He was 74 and 24 in 3 years at Utah State, and he did enough to qualify for three NCAA tournaments while winning multiple Mountain West championships. Utah, growing up for me, was a program because of the great Rick Majerus. That was one that every year you locked in on during the NCAA tournament because they were a team that could make a run in 1998. They advanced all the way to the national title game where they lost to Kentucky 78-69. What does Craig Smith have to do to again make Utah a national power? We'll find out when Craig Smith, the newly minted head coach of the Utah Utes, joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next. We continue with our new coaches series, and we welcome in somebody who made Utah State, a perennial contender for the NCAA tournament, won 74 games and a couple of Mountain West Conference championships in 3 years in Logan. He is now the new head coach of the Utah Utes. He is Craig Smith, and he joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And Craig, first off, how would you describe the last couple of weeks?
Well, we sleep in May, John. It might be June in this scenario, but it's been awesome, man. It's been I came back to Logan. I'm in a unique scenario where the University of Utah and Utah State are about 90 minutes apart. So I've been home for the second time, but I was doing the math. I think I've been at my house for 6 days over the last roughly 40 days with the conference tournament, the NCAA tournament. You know, get home from the NCAA tournament, and 6 days later, I'm hired as the men's basketball coach at Utah. So it's certainly been fast and furious. But, you know, some people would say, John, some people would say that's anarchy. But the wise people know that's just college basketball.
Oh, it spreads. And, you know, I'm curious from your perspective, Craig, you know, the range of emotions had to be crazy because you got an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament, but you were on the bubble. You're trying to win key games down the stretch. Then you get the at-large bid. Then you go to the bubble in Indianapolis. You lose, obviously, a very hard-fought game to Texas Tech. And then you come home and you start interviewing for the Utah job. What was it like over that 7 to 10 day span going through that range of emotions?
Well, there's every emotion you can imagine. I mean, you know, we've been on the bubble at Utah State all year. And of course, we had a whole new team, and then to be able to finish like we did, and we ended up losing in the conference tournament championship. And then, you know, now you're on the bubble and you're watching the NCAA tournament show, and we felt good about our resume. Our net was 42, and we'd beaten San Diego State twice and had some things with COVID like everybody did. How about this? In late January and February, we didn't have a home game for 42 days. So there was a lot of things going through your mind. And we see, you know, Texas Tech as the 6th and Utah State as the 11th. And just you explode in that feeling is one that you'll never forget. And then we flew out that night, got to Indy late, started our bubble stuff and getting the swab up your nose for 7 straight days, and then you lose. And I didn't watch. You know, it's almost the farther you go, I think it's almost more disappointing when you lose because you taste it and you know how close you are. And so I didn't watch an NCAA tournament game the rest of the way until the national championship because it just goes to the core. And then, you know, all the stuff with Utah happened really quick and you get announced 6 days later. And now you're drinking out of a fire hose and you're trying to hire staff and you're developing relationships with the current players and you're trying to recruit new guys and meet as many people as you can. So you experience about everything. It's been about a 5 to 6 week high, except for when we lost to Texas Tech. And I know it's one of your go-to sayings, we sleep in May. And like I said at the top, we sleep in June. I mean, you just go, go, go. And that's part of this business.
No, it definitely is, Craig. And, you know, I'm curious, you obviously came back from Indianapolis and you were obviously starting the process with Utah. But for you personally, when was the first time where you said to yourself, you know what, I have a real chance here to be the next head coach at Utah?
The day before it was announced, essentially. But, you know, it's one of those things, John, we loved Utah State in our 3 years. It was an amazing, amazing experience. The championships and a tremendous home court and unbelievable people. And there was only a certain number of places, quite frankly, that I would look, and Utah was one of them. And just the rich tradition of excellence at the University of Utah, obviously the high major level being in the Pac-12 and 5 teams in the Pac-12 going to the NCAA tournament and doing very well in the NCAA tournament, and it's the highest level. And when you look at the resources we have and our facilities are literally state of the art in every way, shape, and form. And so it was always a spot that I'd really admired. And it goes way back even to 1998, my second Final Four ever. I was at that national title game when the University of Utah lost to the University of Kentucky and just kind of modeled a lot of our teams after that team in terms of how they were built. That's the beauty of a head basketball coach is not only are you the coach in college, you're also the GM. in a lot of respects. And so I learned a lot watching that team, and I almost got to pinch myself at times to think that now I'm the men's basketball coach at the University of Utah.
Well, taking a job at a place like Utah is easy because of all the reasons you just mentioned. Saying goodbye to your team at Utah State couldn't have been easy. What was that like?
Well, that's tough, and there's not, you know, there's never an exact way to do it, especially with the locations, and it's, you know, the way social media is, and one way or another, it's going to get leaked, and it's hard to, you know, you tell your team it's going to get leaked, you wait and tell the others, so there's a lot that goes into it, but it's tough. I mean, those, you know, this year's team in just year three, Brock Miller was the only scholarship player that we inherited when we got here. Justin Bean was a walk-on, and obviously Justin Bean, I don't know if I've ever seen in my 25 years of college basketball, I don't think I've ever seen a guy transform his game in that amount of time to the level he did. I mean, we had 11 guys on our roster when I got hired. Well, after the defections, because a lot of guys left when they hired me. And Justin was clearly number 11 out of 11 in terms of ability and talent. And you fast forward 2-3 years later, and he's a two-time All-League guy. And so people forget, you know, this is an entirely new roster this year. And for our guys to do what they did and to make the NCAA tournament was incredible when most people, you know, really didn't think that was going to happen. But that's the hardest part, John, is you feel a lot of mixed emotions. You're so excited for the future, but those guys believed in us. You know, yeah. We recruited almost every one of those guys here. And so you feel like you're kind of bailing on them, quite frankly. There's so many mix of emotions. And it's hard to express that. And then, of course, with the rules, you know, once you do that, like, you know, you're not supposed to talk to them because right now you're like tampering, so to speak. So it's a hard thing to go through. I think the world of those young men that believed in us and John Hartwell, our athletic director, but certainly you feel every range of emotion when you go through that process.
Well, you went 74-24 in 3 years at Utah State, and I'm just saying, as you did as good a job at Utah State as any coach did anywhere the last 3 years, because you made Utah State, which was an afterthought in the Mountain West, a perennial NCAA tournament contender. But I'm curious, how can you do the same thing at Utah over the next 3 years that you did at Utah State now that you're in the Pac-12?
Well, we've always had a formula for success, and whether it was at Mayville State, where they'd won one game the year before we got there, and we were able to go to three straight national tournaments, including a national champions, national runner-up. That's still a game I've never watched. And then at South Dakota, took a couple years, but three winning records, and the second most wins in the history of that school, our fourth year, and we won a conference championship. And then to be able to do what we did at Utah State, and it's not secret, you know, we talk a lot about chopping wood, and I won't bore you with the background, but I grew up chopping wood in northern Minnesota. I wasn't able to grow a beard or anything, but I did wear a flannel shirt, and we would just, you know, to knock down a tree, you can't knock it down in one big swoop, right? You just got to keep chopping and chopping and chopping, and you just never know when that tree is going to fall over, and so you have to have persistence and keep going. And you know, big key for us is overstated, but culture. I love the culture that we've had everywhere we've been. It's hard to describe, but you know when you're in it. And you know, you got to recruit the right types of people. Obviously, they got to have the talent. You got to have a certain level of athleticism. But, you know, in our league, we were probably 8 or 9 out of the 11 teams all 3 years we were here. It certainly helped having a guy like Demish Keita and Sam Merrill our first 2 years. But we love skilled guys. We love guys that love to be in the gym, that are passionate about basketball and are passionate about winners. And how do you describe a winner? You know, Bear Bryant used to say, I don't know how you describe it, but you know it when you see it. And so we plan on doing the same type of thing. And we've been busy recruiting like crazy. And I think we've signed 3 guys, and we anticipate to sign, you know, 2 or 3 more here, hopefully in the next few weeks. So it's an amazing place. Obviously, it's a heck of a league. We got our work cut out for us, but you know, it's all relative. We were picked 9th at Utah State when we got here, and we were able to win a conference championship in our first year. So you never know. You can't measure the what's inside somebody, and we plan on going out and recruiting a bunch of winners.
Well, recruiting's obviously one part of it, but also when you take over a new job, you're also going to inherit, obviously, players as well. Your initial impressions of the roster that you did inherit?
Well, obviously, we've had some turnover with some guys leaving, but the guys that have been working out, we've been going like crazy. You know, we're big in the skill development. Everybody says that. We do it. Our guys get better, and we've been able to work our guys out for, 12 times now in 3 weeks. And I love how hard these guys have been working in the weight room and in the gym. And I really like our skill level. We've returned some good players and that I think have high ceilings. And so it's been very, very encouraging. I think it's important for them to learn our language, see what we do, and get them going. And we can learn their games a little bit, so that helps us out in the recruiting trail. But, you know, there's definitely some really good players in our program and some good pieces of guys that are tough and understand the game. And so excited to build with these guys. They've had tremendous energy and an attitude that craves improvement. And as a coach, that's all you can ask for.
Craig Smith joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Well, Craig, as you self-evaluate yourself, what's the biggest difference in Craig Smith as a head coach now versus 3 years ago when he was getting ready to take over at Utah State?
Well, certainly coming, you know, I'm a guy from Stephen, Minnesota, graduated number two in my class. There were 18 of us. And so I got the salutatorian, but I still couldn't be in that top 10%, John. But, you know, moving this way, you move west of the Rocky Mountains. I didn't have any connections to Utah. When John Hartwell at Utah State hired me, I did not know him or have a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. I knew very people around the situation. So coming in, you're coming into a whole new area, a whole new region of the country. And so that was a big thing. Understanding the landscape of Utah basketball, Utah State basketball, and certainly the western half of the country in terms of recruiting. And now having been at Utah State for 3 years, there's a big-time comfort level of what it's like and how great the basketball is in this state and how to recruit, you know, to this state. And so I think that made a huge difference. Obviously, you know, like anybody, you grow as you get older and you get more mature and you get more confident in what you're doing. But, you know, at the end of the day, I know what we believe in. I know what I believe in as a coach. I know my recipe for success. Doesn't mean it's right for everybody, but I know what works for me. And so I'm very confident in that and understand what it takes. And then having a big time familiarity with the landscape in this state that absolutely loves basketball and is incredibly knowledgeable about basketball.
Well, and obviously part of that is having familiar faces, obviously, around you. And you brought a player from Utah State, Raleigh Worcester, who I thought was a very, very good freshman in the Mountain West. You've also added, you know, David Jenkins, a transfer from UNLV, another transfer from Cincinnati. We're obviously shifting with the times now with immediate eligibility, but those three players give you a little bit of experience here out of the gate. How big of an impact will that troika have for you next season?
Well, it's something that we felt like we needed. Like we touched on earlier, I really like a lot of the pieces that are in our that we inherited in our program. But with the transfer portal and guys leaving and, you know, you got to develop some depth, certainly. I think we had 6 or 7 scholarships available about 2.5 weeks ago. So that's half your team. And so we had work to do. And certainly experience matters. I really like the blend of we have 2 incoming freshmen coming in that I'm really excited about. But we also felt like we needed more experience. And of course, you know, you brought up David Jenkins, who's a big-time scorer. And, of course, when I was at South Dakota, we went against him when he was at South Dakota State. Like I said in one of our Zoom calls with him, I told him he had 25 in the championship game against us, and he corrected me, he had 29. And earlier this year when we played UNLV, he had 33. He's a guy that can really get it going and can really shoot it. And then Raleigh's just an old-school player, man. Like, obviously, he was a freshman last year, almost had a triple-double in that same game that Jenkins had 33. But Raleigh's just a do-it-all guy. He's a guy that he doesn't care what position he plays. He doesn't care what he's labeled. He doesn't care what number he wears. He just wants to win and compete. And I said it in the press release, he's a guy that He doesn't care if he guards the five man. He doesn't care if he guards the point guard. He doesn't care if he's just a hooper, man. And so he's an old school guy, tough minded, just a winner in every way, shape, and form. And on a side note, he can throw a football like 65 yards on the flick of the wrist. You should see him throw that thing. Might have to come up with something like that. Aaron Rodgers Jr. or something.
Aaron Rodgers Jr. for sure, and I'm sure that he's going to live up to the billing. And, you know, living up to the billing is something that Utah fans obviously hope happens for Utah basketball. And, you know, I was talking about this a little bit in the open here, Craig. You know, the perception of Utah basketball in the 90s was one that, you know, for all intents and purposes, was one that was going to be a perennial threat in the NCAA tournament under Rick Majerus. When you were coming up as a coach, how did you perceive Utah basketball?
Well, I knew about it because Nick Jacobson is a young man who played here, was a very good player. He was from Fargo, North Dakota, right? And I grew up about an hour and 45 minutes from Fargo. So there was a familiarity because of Nick. And then, like I said, when I was a 24-year-old GA at Northern State University, that I went to my second Final Four, and that was my first national championship game. And really watch those teams. And then as I got older and you start going through, when I got hired at Mayville as the head coach, I was 31. And a couple years prior to that, I met the late, great Don Meyer, who was the longtime coach at Lipscomb when they were not Division I. And then they went Division I. He decided to take the job at Northern State. And he really took me under his wing for whatever reason. I don't know why, but he just did. He kind of looked out for me in every way, shape, and form. I spent a day with John Wooden. I could talk all day about that, but because of Coach Meyer and Coach Meyer was really good friends with Coach Majerus. So I never met Coach Majerus, but I've always followed this program because of I'm a history major, the rich tradition of excellence here. And then those kind of connections and how they all worked out. It's always been a spot I've really followed. And it's always been important to me to be at places where fans are passionate about basketball, they're knowledgeable, they understand the game, and they truly care. That was the number one reason that I came to Utah State, because the fan base was incredible. And so as a coach, you want to work. I don't say work because I don't consider what I do work. It's a passion of what I do. But you want to be at a place where the fans truly care and want to be a part of something special. And certainly we have that at the University of Utah.
Well, you definitely have that, and you're now going to be trying to build that in a league that seems like it's finally getting its due from a national perspective. And I look at things, and, you know, obviously you see what happened with so many teams going to the second weekend. You see UCLA obviously going all the way to the Final Four, taking Gonzaga to the brink. And the Pac-12 right now is definitely on an upward trajectory from a national perspective. Your impressions of the league that you're about to join?
Well, I'm so excited to be a part of it. It's great basketball, and that's what you want. I mean, you want the league to have depth and be really good. And I know it's easy to say that right now. I'm on my honeymoon stage and haven't been through the grind of this league specifically. I have been through the grind of the Big Ten, but that's what you want. I mean, where every game's a challenge, and you want that, and you crave that. And, you know, it's such a fine line, and you watch more college basketball than anybody, and you know how this goes. But, I mean, I saw like 2 minutes of the end of the UCLA, because this is before we played, the UCLA Michigan State game. And UCLA makes a three at the buzzer right before the half to cut their deficit from 13 to 10. I mean, it looked like they might get blown out, right? And next thing you know, you fast forward 3 weeks later, they're in the Final Four. And they were one of the last four teams to make the NCAA tournament. Oregon State finishes fifth. And they just catch fire, win the conference tournament. It's the only way they were getting in to the NCAA tournament. They go to the Sweet 16. And that's the beauty of this game, right? I mean, it's I always say I'd rather be a good team playing great at the end of the year than a great team playing good. And that's what happened in our league. Everybody kind of caught fire late in the year. And it's high level. There's a lot of, you know, the Pac-12 is so spread out from, you know, Arizona up to Washington and everywhere in between. There's a lot of different styles of play. There's great coaching up and down the Pac-12, and obviously there's high-level players. So it's an exciting time, and and it's a league being in the BCS and one of the top six leagues, five leagues in the country, that's what you want to be a part of, because if you do well in your league, you have a chance every year, you know, depending on the school, to win a national championship. And like Bill Walton says, it's the League of Champions.
No, it definitely is the Conference of Champions. And, you know, part of that and putting yourself in a position to achieve that is obviously putting together a great schedule. And I know how meticulous you were at Utah State. It's a little bit different because, you know, you were in the Mountain West. You weren't obviously in the Pac-12, but it'll probably be easier for you to schedule now at Utah. How do you want the skeleton of Utah's non-conference schedule to look moving forward starting next season?
Well, John, that was one of the biggest things we did here, was we were meticulous and we put a lot of time into scheduling right. Because in our league, if you finish fifth, you are not getting in the Mountain West. If you finish fifth, you are not getting in that large bid, right? That rarely happens. I think once in the history of the Mountain West. And so you constantly got to set yourself up with a net. Our lowest net ranking in 3 years at Utah State was 43, and that was this year. And so that was big. We put a lot of time, a lot of energy into that. And we'll do the same in the Pac-12. Obviously, the league schedule is a little more beefed up, without a question, so that helps. We're always going to play BYU, you know, and BYU, Mark Pope has done a great job there. And so that's, you know, should be a net one type of game, or a quad one type of game. And so you start with that. But we want to play, you know, I've always said, bring on the competition. And so, you know, we'd love to start some home-and-home series. I feel like that's starting to get lost in the shuffle in non-conference play. But I believe in that. I think it's great for both fan bases, right? I think it's great for the student body of both fan bases. And I think that's important. So we'll look into that. Obviously, the trend now is you play more neutral court games against higher-level competition. So we'll look at that. I think it's important in our state to play – well, you know, there's seven Division I schools in the state of Utah. And I think it's important, being the flagship university at the University of Utah, to play those all the schools in our state. I think it's important for the state. I think it's important for each respective fan base to do that. And so we want to schedule aggressive. We want to schedule up, so to speak, to make sure we put ourselves in the best possible position. So if we don't win the conference tournament and get the automatic qualifier, then you're set up to get an at-large bid. And so that's something we work very, very hard at and very diligently at, and we'll certainly do the same here.
Final thing, Craig, your first year at Utah State, like I said, you were an afterthought starting out in the Mountain West. Before you know it, you do an unbelievable job. You're in an 8-9 game against Washington at the end of the year in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I know there is a lot of ground to cover between now and the start of next season. But when you think about, obviously, what you've inherited, what you're looking to add, and what you've already added, what do you foresee, regardless of personnel, as a reasonable goal for Utah in 21-22?
I don't know. I think that's hard to put a number on that, so to speak, just like we've did everywhere we've been, whether it's Mayville, South Dakota, Utah State, and the University of Utah. Our goal is to get to the NCAA tournament and win when we get there. And that's our goal, and we're going to be steadfast with that. There's a lot of things that come into play with that, whether it's injuries, whether it's buy-in, you know, meaning like guys that really believe in themselves and have the character and toughness to be all in, you know, and when do they really figure it out? There's always pivotal moments and defining moments within a season, before a season, when you take over. And there's defining moments for your team. There's defining moments for individual players that go into that. So there's so many things that come into it. But, John, our goal is to get to the NCAA tournament. And how are we going to do it? I don't know yet. You know, that road will take its course. You know, we're going to find out. We don't play for our first game is November 9th, yep. Right? And that's the first day teams can play. And that's still 6.5 months away. So I'm excited to see who's going to grow and develop, who is going to take their game to the next level in the six months. This is the time where guys really, really improve. And some don't, because they don't put the time in. So I'm super excited where we're at today. We have a lot of work to get done. But, you know, being the history major I am, I know where we were, I know where we are, and I'm super excited about where we're going.
Well, Craig, appreciate a couple minutes. Know how busy you are. Very happy for your success. Obviously, well-deserved. And as always, look forward to staying connected along the way.
Hey, John, a couple things for you now. We're going to get you out to Salt Lake City, right? I'll have the food scene all lined up for you.
I heard there's some good Italian spots in Salt Lake.
You've always said you've never been to Europe. You have to go to San Sebastian. Amazing, amazing place and incredible food scene.
Is that in Salt Lake City or in Europe?
Well, both. I mean, we have an incredible food scene here, and I'm going to get you squared away. But I always read on your tweet, not always. I haven't been on social media as much, but I know you state that you've never been to Europe.
If
you ever get to Europe, I'm putting this on your radar, San Sebastian. You can't go wrong.
San Sebastian. Well, I will be there and look forward to coming out and spending time with you guys in Salt Lake City as you try to build Utah into, again, you know, one of the top programs on the West Coast. It happened, obviously, under Coach Majerus. And, you know, Craig, I have no doubt that you're going to make it a great program in the Pac-12. So, again, thank you for your time. And, as always, look forward to staying connected.
All right. Thanks, John. Go Utes.
You got it. That is Utah head coach Craig Smith. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'd like to thank Utah head coach Craig Smith for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, before we get to the social media portion of the podcast, I want to remind you that all this week is being brought to you by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much work to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Our first question comes from Trevor Niffin. And it's, John, is Syracuse a top contender in the ACC with their additions from the transfer portal? Well, you're referencing, obviously, Symear Torrence from Marquette and Cole Swider from Villanova. Syracuse, to me, I have ranked in the top 20. Again, this is a Sweet 16 team that's going to bring back Joe Girard, Buddy Boeheim, Quincy Guerrier, who obviously went through the NBA draft process. They're also bringing in Jimmy Boeheim, the son of Jim Boeheim from Cornell. I think Syracuse is a legitimate top 20, 25 team and one of the top teams next year in the ACC, but things are always changing. And that's one of the things I always talk about this time of year. Things are always moving minute by minute with this transfer portal. Our next question is going to come from, let's see here, Justin Lockhart, and it's, John, is Johnny Juzang returning to UCLA? Johnny Juzang has not made an official announcement yet. Obviously, Johnny Juzang was a star, you know, obviously during the NCAA tournament, was sensational for Mick Cronin's team down the stretch. Wouldn't be shocked if he tested the waters. But again, Johnny Juzang, to me, could come back next year, be an All-American. But again, no official decision yet for Juzang. You'd think we'd have one in the next couple weeks if he is indeed going to test the waters. And our final question right here is going to be from Ryan Berry. And it's, John, is there any chance that UK has a repeat of the abysmal 2021 season? I think Kentucky's going to be better than 9-16. I definitely do, but I will say this, and this is something to keep in mind. Kentucky added two impact transfers in Kellen Grady from Davidson, Oscar Shiwe from West Virginia. But now the transfer portal has leveled the playing field for everybody to get old and stay old and retool the rosters quickly. Look at some of the reinforcements that we've seen already in the SEC. Arkansas has added Chris Likes from Miami and Audis Tony from Pittsburgh. They've also added a very good player from the mid-major market as well. LSU has added Xavier Pinson. Auburn's added Walker Kessler. Alabama's added Noah Gurley, a very good player from Furman. And I mentioned earlier, Mississippi State's added Garrison Brooks and DJ Jeffries. So what does that mean? Teams can get talent, they can get experience, and they can get it quickly. That levels the playing field in terms of flipping a roster quickly. So it's going to be interesting. I think Kentucky's going to be better. The question is, how much better? And now, let's get to some nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Five.
Six.
No, five.
But you were close.
Nugget number one, Arizona officially hired Gonzaga associate head coach Tommy Lloyd last week as its next head basketball coach. Lloyd comes with a tremendous reputation and tremendous pedigree, a great recruiter. But again, making a jump from being an assistant at a place like Gonzaga to a program like Arizona as the head coach is kind of comparable to what Roy Williams did going from being a North Carolina assistant to Kansas's head coach in 1988. One word to everybody here, be patient with Tommy Lloyd. This is not an easy transition. Nugget number two, Cincinnati hired Wes Miller from UNC Greensboro last week as its head coach. Miller does not have ties to the Bearcats program or area. Obviously played at North Carolina and also coached at UNC Greensboro. If you think back to other coaches that have coached Cincinnati, John Brannan, his predecessor, obviously was in the area. He was coaching at Northern Kentucky, and Mick Cronin worked for Bob Huggins and also was somebody who went to the University of Cincinnati. Wes Miller is somebody, again, who played at James Madison, transferred to North Carolina, hasn't worked in the Midwest, but has done a very good job as a head coach. I like the hire. Nugget number three, Texas loading up. Chris Beard has done yeoman's work with the transfer portal. He's added Timmy Allen from Utah and Kentucky transfer Devin Askew, as well as Creighton transfer Christian Bishop. Andrew Jones and Jace Febris have also announced their intentions to return to Texas. Longhorns looking like a top 25 team. Nugget number four, Illinois retooling. Very quietly, Illinois had a very good weekend. Kofi Coburn announced his intentions to go to the NBA draft, but Utah transfer Alfonso Plummer committed, and Trent Frazier returned to school. He made that announcement on Saturday. Illinois won't be as good as last season, but I still think they're a top 30-35 team with Andre Curbelo emerging into an All-American candidate in 21-22. And then nugget number five, UCLA maximizing momentum. On Friday, UCLA got a commitment from Rutgers grad transfer Miles Johnson that gives the Bruins a two-headed monster at the five along with Cody Riley. Also got a commitment from a five-star point guard in the 2022 class in Dylan Andrews. So UCLA off that Final Four run, maximizing momentum on the recruiting trail. We'd like to thank Utah head coach Craig Smith for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.